Lunch with Leon.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lunch with Leon. Thanks very much for joining us today. And before I get to talk to my guest, I'm now, as often requested, bringing you up to date with one or two things that have been happening in my world. So finally, Qantas, you resolved my complaint after you cancelled my flight to Sydney from Dallas, separated me from my luggage and marooned me in San Francisco. I was a bit critical, but you have now done the right thing. I've been adequately compensated and the matter is closed. So thank you, Qantas. You're back in my good books, which is great news. If you were around in East London on the 23rd of March, you might have seen something exciting going on routes 62 and 145 in the Barking area. And to celebrate 100 years of Barking Garage, we ran lots of old buses from the London Bus Museum and our friends around the preservation movement on those two routes between Dagenham, Barking, up to Redbridge. It was a really exciting day. I got to drive for most of the day in an old Guy double-decker with a crash gearbox, and we all had great fun, raised lots of money for charity, and a great way to celebrate 100 years of London bus operations from Barking Garage. One evening, I was also delighted to be the after-dinner speaker at APPG at the House of Lords. That's the All-Parliamentary Passenger Transport Group. This is chaired by Lord Snape, and there were two speakers, Louise Cheeseman, who used to be the director of buses at TfL, but is still working very hard leading for Women in Bus and Coach, and me. And I had some great guests. I had Justin Kutzier from Go Metro from Cape Town, and also from Cape Town, the people that run City Sightseeing. That's Wendy and Klaus Torek. They were in town, so also came to the House of Lords for dinner. Louise and I did a double act. She obviously continuing to talk about the progress that we need to make about women in bus and coach. And I was talking about safety, in particular, the big improvements in safety that we need to make on bus and coach, following in the footsteps of aviation and other transport industries. And then finally, just yesterday, while I'm recording this, I was chairing once again the Bus Centre of Excellence Advisory Board that brings together operators, organisations, local authorities, and all those people involved in bus excellence. Bus Centre of Excellence set up by the 2021 bus policy paper. I'm delighted to chair the advisory board. And we had a great presentation from Kerry Cheek from TfL, in particular with what is happening on the bus safety standard and all aspects of bus safety in London, and now its wider context outside London as well. Bus Centre of Excellence is deeply involved in this development of a better safety culture. And it was great to listen to Kerry and then have a great discussion around the table. Lots more information, this and loads of other stuff on the Bus Centre of Excellence website. That's buscentreofexcellence.org.uk. Absolute treasure trove of things on there, information, blogs, e-learning, and all provided for everybody who's involved in the industry about cross-sharing best practice and making sure that we do deliver better bus services across country. So that's been lots of news from me. Now we come to my guest. And I'm absolutely delighted to have on the show the former senior traffic commissioner, Beverly Bell. I'm sure many people in the industry have known Beverly. She's given a huge long service to the industry. Most of you will have seen her speak or heard her. A few of you might have been before her while she was actually the traffic commissioner. Regardless of that, she's still very active in the industry. And I was really pleased to catch up with Beverly for lunch and ask her what she's up to.
So two things, really. First of all, I'm doing consulting. And secondly, I'm doing training. And I suppose people will want to know, what does that entail? Consulting is all about helping operators to stay compliant or to be even more compliant than they already are. It's about promoting best practice. It's about promoting efficiencies, because we all know that efficiencies can help the bottom line. And it's a really challenging world that operators are working in at the moment. And so we try to not just make them compliant, but make them more efficient. I'll pause for breath for a moment, because Leon, you know, once you and I get chatting, that I tend to just chat away.
That's all right.
And I can sometimes bore the pants off you, and I'll try not to do that. But the second thing I do when I'm not drinking gin and eating chocolate is watching old black and white films on the television is training. And that's very dear to my heart. I've always enjoyed looking at training, making sure that everybody in an organisation is upskilled, we all know that the traffic commissioners require transport managers to have regular refresher training. Nick Denton, who some of your listeners will know, is a former full-time commissioner and a current deputy, and I do what we like to call the Nick and Bev Roadshow. And that's where we go around the country, including Scotland and Wales, Great Britain in other words, and we deliver a two-day TMCPC refresher course. And we also deliver TMCPC training for people taking their exams, PSV and goods. That's a whole separate conversation, Leon, about whether or not the TMCPC exam is fit for purpose, about whether it means that it teaches you to be a transport manager. Answer, no. But there's still a real value, obviously, in training generally. So I'll pause for breath, Leon, because as I say, I do go on a bit. And that's really what I'm doing now.
Let's just unpick that a bit, if I may, because you raised the subject about the transport managers CPC. We also happen to be in the year that nearly everybody's driver CPC expires, because if you've been doing the 5-yearly cycle since it started, a lot of us all fall out of bed this September. And you didn't raise it, but the driver CPC has had loads of criticism, hasn't it? Because
yes, it has.
There was a time when you could do the same course 5 times in a week and qualify. Can't do that, I don't think.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you use the word qualify. I would suggest, Leon, it's not really a qualification at all. It's a box-ticking exercise. So tell me, Leon, have you got to do your driver CPC come September?
I do.
Are you still driving buses?
I am, of course.
I'd like to go on a little meander, really, about vintage buses.
We can do that.
Because I know you and some chap you know called Peter. I'm not quite sure who he is. I don't think he's a very important person.
You mean the Lord Hendy?
That's the one. Yes, that's the one. I know you and he are extremely keen on vintage buses. And in fact, I've even used your bus on one very special occasion, haven't I?
You have indeed. Are we going to talk about it, or is that private?
No, of course we can talk. We can talk
about... So we're
about,
talking about your daughter's wedding?
Yes, my daughter Kate's wedding. I'm eternally grateful to Kate for making me a grandmother. So I'm now Granny B in the Bell household. But it's not about Kate. It's about the value, I think, that historic buses bring to special occasions.
I think so.
You know, not just weddings. There are all sorts of other special occasions. And of course, you know, you always have to be a sort of certain type of person, don't you, Leon, to have an interest in old buses?
You do. So you've skipped over one or two things, like how we blocked up all the traffic in Sloane Street, because one of the things we didn't do in our reconnaissance was to discover there were going to be roadworks closing half of Sloane Street, and we thought we'd close the other half. But to your point, I think that the best way to describe it is when any vintage vehicle, whether it's a bus or a car, a fire engine or whatever, is out there in the big wide world, people look and they smile. And they're cheered up. It makes their life happier. And then sort of moving on from that a bit, one of the things that Peter and I are very keen on in our capacities as trustees at the London Bus Museum, which is that this is big, heavy engineering built without computers. And for young people to see old stuff, 70, 80, 90-year-old equipment that was made with a pen and paper, was made using only mental and written down arithmetic, no calculators, no computers, which is why there is such great structural integrity, which is why there's such great resilience, which of course is why they last so long, because they were built really well. And to see young children look at big things that were made by hand, I think gives them something that they couldn't possibly learn off the internet or by any other form of learning. You've actually got to look at the thing, realize how much bigger than you it is, and say, are you telling me people built this?
And it's real and it's tangible.
Yeah.
And it does. When we did that little journey from where you picked up Kate and Martin to where they got married, and obviously we weren't to say where that was, the joy on the passengers' faces was just amazing. As, if I may say, was the joy on yours and Peter's face.
Indeed.
Having
Indeed.
A damn good time. And when we arrived at a certain town hall, everybody, as you say, stopped and looked. And there was, I remember, there was a vintage vehicle in front of us. And it was, I don't know, some sort of Rolls Royce or something. And Peter said, bless him, and I love him for it, I'll go round the block because I don't want to upstage the Rolls Royce. And it's true.
It was. It was true. It was absolutely true. So out of that, I think hopefully young people get interested and want to be involved and aspire,
Yes.
and maybe
Yes.
that spark makes them the next transport commissioner for London, makes them the Secretary of State for Transport, makes them a bus company manager, or some sort of career in the transport game. Where, I don't know about you think about this, but young people today, transport is quite a long way down their career choices. You know, at the top they want to be influencers and social media gurus and make computer games. And transport's quite a long way down the list, because quite wrongly now, people assume that jobs in transport are dull and menial, whereas in fact they're very exciting.
Yes.
If you're in computerized scheduling or data processing or artificial intelligence and all that sort of stuff, there are some really exciting jobs in transport.
Well, that there are. I mean, if I can just come back on a couple of those things, and it's time for our second gin and tonic, although I know it's a bit early, but you talk about it just a transport game. In my old job, because I used to be a regulator, when people used to say to me it's a game, I used to give them a Paddington Bear hard stare and say, no, it's not. It's not a game. Well, first of all, it's a profession. And secondly, you're risking people's lives every day. So I'm just having a bit of fun with you there, Leon.
No, I
And you
stand
know,
corrected.
no, I'm just
Stand
teasing you, as you
corrected.
know. And
Former senior traffic commissioner. I stand corrected.
if people could see this, I'd be looking at you imperiously over my glasses. But secondly, what's interesting is you've mentioned some really sort of top-notch jobs there. You know, let's not forget the value of everybody who plays their part. And that brings me on to the second point that you've just raised about the word transport. What does it mean? It's like law. What does it mean? It covers everything. You know, for me, what I do is the ultimate dream job because it combines law, which is my first love, and transport, which became completely unexpectedly my second love. And both of those things absolutely impact on every single thing that we do as we go about our day-to-day business. So it's the mechanics, it's the people that make sure that the right vehicles, whether they're buses, lorries, coaches, whatever, are in the right place at the right time so we can eat our cornflakes or our granola or our egg and bacon at breakfast. And so that we can make sure that we get to the doctors on time. Not that we can get into the doctors these days, but you get the point. So it's vitally important. And we've just done a 2-day TMCPC refresher course in Warrington. You know, Leon, I live for glamour. Next week it's Hemel Hempstead. And I love them both equally, as much as I love my children, not as much as my dogs, but there we go. And
So in order
we
then,
had
dogs, children, Warrington and Hemel Hempstead. Okay, right.
we had a 24-year-old new transport manager on our course. And we also had a bus and coach operator on our course who had been in the business for, he'd had his own business for 57 years.
Wow.
And another one who'd had his business for 47. And neither of those two, well, one of them had done a CPC refresh and one of them hadn't. They both took away things that they would use in their everyday work. But it was so interesting watching how those two older, more senior individuals, and then the young TM who's 24, were engaging. So the older ones were writing it down with this old-fashioned thing called a pen on a piece of paper. And the 24-year-old was on his phone, and we have a code of conduct, and we say, you know, please don't send you texts and you know, message your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever they are these days while we're on the course. So I had to have a word with him, and he said, Beverly, I'm Googling. And he was.
Sure.
And what he was doing was when I was saying, oh, there's this guidance on, for example, clandestine entrance, he's there Googling it and he's getting the information and he's saving it and he's dealing with it. So we are working in such a different way,
And you
but we're
highlight
so.
something there, of course, generally about education, which was we were taught to memorize facts, and
Yes.
today young people ought to be taught how to find things out and rationalize what they learn and repeat it back.
And apply what they need to, and be careful that the information they've got is correct.
Sure.
Because the internet's a big, scary place.
Yes, and Wikipedia is not definitive.
No, it's not.
No.
It makes me wonder whether when we look at the future, and my daughter's a teacher now and she teaches maths, but it makes me wonder, and I suggested this years ago when I was chair of governors at my old school, at what stage will we lose the ability to write?
Oh, I wonder, because my handwriting is, I should have been a doctor based on my current handwriting, because it's just one long squiggle with some dots in it. I wonder indeed. In fact, writing is actually quite hard now because you just become frustrated because you can't get your thoughts down quick enough.
Yes. And so what I used to do until about 2 months ago was I used to dictate my work, and then an old-fashioned typist would type it, and Thomas, who's our lovely sort of, I call him our lovely sort of techie, but he's also our social media chappie, and he's, I don't know, 12. No, he's not. He may be listening, and Thomas is probably about 23, so he's quite mature. And he actually used to be a teacher. And he said, "Beverly, why are you doing this? You've just got an app on your phone, which is voice to text recognition,
Sure.
and it's transformed what I do, and it's transformed how quickly I do it. So now I dictate it all into my phone, it transcribes it into text, and all I have to do is edit it. Why do I need to write?"
Sure. No. I get it. And in fact, you can have it plugged into your phone so that it automatically transcribes Zoom and Teams meetings that you do. So you've got a proper written record of the conversation that you had, because how many times do we argue about who said what to who? And you've got a record.
Lunch with Leon in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Check out passengertransport.co.uk.
So do you think it, like in your training work, then you yourself might get replaced by artificial intelligence?
Leon, I could look at you and say, "Darling, I'm irreplaceable," but that would be arrogant of me. No, I think there's a place for everything. Whatever the tool is that we use, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's a video, whether it's a link to the internet, it all has its place. But I still think we mustn't underestimate the value of face-to-face contact. We specialize in classroom courses. And the finance manager says, "Oh, can't you do it on Teams? We don't want to pay for travel and a hotel accommodation." And the delegates say, "No, we want to be there." And it's a much
Yeah.
richer experience.
Yes, which is not only the formal part of the course, it's the informal part of the course,
Yes.
the interaction during the coffee break, the chat over lunch, and the friendships that are made and then last subsequently would never happen on Teams.
No, you're absolutely right. And in any course where you have people together for a long time, especially on our 10-day courses, they've usually formed a WhatsApp group after about 10 minutes, and then they still co stay in contact afterwards, which is really good. But also, it's not just about the physical interaction with the people, it's the physical interaction with the vehicles, with the drivers. On our courses, we do a lot about management of drivers, and one of the my favorites, well, two favorite sections of the course, this is the 2-day course. Section one is when Nick and I talk about what you can do remotely from the comfort of your bed or your sitting room, and what you have to do on the ground by physically being at the premises. Brian Suter was always a great exponent of this. And of course, he was part of what we lovingly call the smoking mafia. And he used to go around the back of the bike sheds and have a fag with the drivers, didn't he?
And
And he
learned
found
more
out,
there than in a week of
yes.
management meetings. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, now you don't have to smoke. You can still just go and stand with the smoking mafia and still learn a lot, or just sit in the crew room and just have a listen, talk to what's going on. So, that's the first point I wanted to make. As for the second one, it's completely gone now, Leon, and I'll have to try and write it down and remember it,
That's all right. It'll all come out in the edit, don't worry.
that's a problem. Well, no, it's quite important actually to keep it in, because that's a problem as we get older.
Well, once that brain cell has died due to alcohol or age, the memory is lost forever. I can remember very clearly what I was doing in 1969, but I can't remember what I had for lunch.
Dare I ask you what you were doing in 1969, Leon?
I tell you where I wanted to take you. This is a this
La
is
Caprice, it's just reopened.
a, started this thought process when Boeing started to have trouble with its 737 MAX aircraft, two of which, as you know, crashed and killed all the occupants, and there's been some other incidents since. And I tell you what makes me now think of it as relevant to our industry, the one that we're in, because I've recently been doing a bit of work and learning about the electric vehicle bus fires that we've had recently. And I tell you where I'm starting to land is that new equipment, whether it's an aeroplane or a ship or a bus or a lorry or whatever, is now so technologically complicated that the regulatory authorities are not clever enough and don't have the right skills to properly inspect and certify it. So in the case of the FAA Boeing situation, actually the FAA subcontracted some of the work back to Boeing themselves. So there was a sort of self-certification process going on, because that's
always dangerous.
That's where the skills were. And now, just, I'm not pointing the finger necessarily at the Vehicle Certification Agency here in the UK, but we are still going round tapping wheel nuts with a hammer while 650 volts of HV running around in the roof, or hydrogen or whatever. So while we're still tapping wheel nuts with a hammer to see if they're loose or not, there's all that dangerous stuff going on. And I'm rapidly coming to the conclusion that just because the manufacturer says and the certification authority says it is satisfactory and compliant, that doesn't guarantee that it's safe.
It absolutely doesn't.
That means I think we have to be much more rigorous in the challenges that we have in our engineering community, with the manufacturers, with the component suppliers, and all the rest of it, because they are all to some extent self-certifying that the thing is all right. And we're relying on a piece of paper that says, here it is. And I just think that the level of complexity now outstrips our capability to certify, inspect, and check. And we all have to be much more searching in our questions about it if we're to make any progress in that direction.
You'd have to define our, wouldn't you? Because the people who manufacture, who design and manufacture, have the technical expertise and knowledge, and they've also got a vested interest in the outcome, because they want to get the spaceship up, or they want to get the plane in the air, or they want to get the new vehicle on the ground running. So it's important that whoever those enforcement agencies are and those certification agencies are, in my view, and I'm speaking here as a transport law consultant, I'm not speaking as a former commissioner, it's really important for those agencies to recruit and retain the best talent in the field. And that means they have to pay them accordingly. But secondly, in my view, Leon, it means that they have to display the right attitude and culture. Mm-hmm. And therein lies a problem with government organisations who have many, many skills. And, you know, God love them, I love civil servants generally. But it's the culture that can sometimes, and this is what came out in this Challenger programme last night, it's the culture within the organisation that's so important.
Sure. And at the end of the day on Challenger, there was such an imperative to go that a number of the normal safeguards that should have been applied were trampled all over because there was such a demand for it to go.
Yes. And whether it was that or whether it's Boeing or even if we take the names out of it, it's we'll get it up in the air or on the road or on the tracks. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. It was fine yesterday. And this is what, again, we talk about this. And this is, I see this in the consulting work I do. It's only a small journey, a short journey. It was OK yesterday. It'll be fine today. And so that's why, you know, safety has to be at the forefront of everything. Otherwise, you know, people's lives are lost and you can't turn the clock back, which is why I really enjoy the work I did in my old job, but I enjoy it just as much now, because the difference in my current role is that in my old role, I could ask and people would always say yes. I only had one bloke who ever said no to me, and that was fun. And there is a funny story where I'd asked him to give me an undertaking and he said no. And he was represented by a very, very good solicitor, Stephen Kirkbright, one of the top three transport lawyers in the country at that time. And I said, well, I shall rise for lunch, Mr. Kirkbright, and we'll see after lunch whether your client's had any change of mind or heart. His client was ex-army. And after the hearing, and the room was packed, it was a bus case. It was in Manchester, it was packed. And Stephen Kirkbright drew himself up to his full 6'3" and said, "Mom, my client has decided over lunch that he would like to give you one." And there were a lot of stifled peals of laughter in the public inquiry room, but I digress. The point is that in my current role, I can ask and they can say no. And so the people that we advise, it's like anybody, isn't it? Why go to a specialist advisor and not take any notice of what they say or think you know better? I used to love watching Sarah Beeny when people were doing up their houses, and she would give them sage advice on what to do, and they would look at her as if to say, "What do you know? I'll do what I want," and then, you know, not make the money they should have done if they'd listened to her advice.
No, indeed. But I'm sure you find that it's rare that people refuse to accept professional advice from you or from other professional practitioners, because you're immediately on the hook, aren't you? Because it isn't that you forgot to do something, it's that you willingly chose not to do the thing that you've been professionally advised to do.
So, yes, I mean, first point is, generally, people come to professional advisors, A, because they're in trouble, and therefore they will do anything you say, generally, to get themselves off the hook. And B, if they're not in trouble, they come to you because they want to go from, in you know, with our clients, from good practice to best practice. So they're there because they're in it because they want to be. The ones that don't want to do it properly don't come to you in the first place. The ones that are in between are the ones I particularly love. And I had one come in through the sort of virtual doors yesterday, is they want to do it, but they don't want to spend the money. And that brings us right back to transport managers, where they need a new transport manager because the previous one's left.
And he's left because he's no longer prepared to put up with the...
No, he's retired.
Oh, he's retired. Okay.
He's done 18 years. He's retired. So they've advertised for a new transport manager. They've not had a single applicant.
Really?
PSV company, authority for a large number of vehicles. So I asked what the salary was, and I'm not going to go into detail, Leon, but the salary was way below what is the market rate for a good, effective, experienced transport manager. And I said, "Well, you'll need to increase the salary." Answer, "The MD says we can't afford it." So I got the accounts up. So of this £1.5 million that you made last year, tell me where you can't afford it. Now, that's a difficult conversation, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because broadly, you're asking them to sacrifice some profit in order to pay the right rate for the right transport manager, which is the cornerstone of your business. Without one, you don't operate. And if you're not operating, you've got no profit because you've got no income because you're in business. So it is stupid. And I think that must be because there will still be some people, the guiding minds in some of these organizations, are still trying to do what we might call minimum safe. I just want to just get this over the line. So I'll pay the lowest rate I can get away with, transport manager, because provided I can just scrape over the line, then everything will be okay. But what you keep on doing is you keep eroding and eroding at your safety margin. And you think you've got a big safety margin, but you've only got a small one. Mm. So if you're just an operator doing what I call minimum safe, just get you over the line, when something goes wrong, you're immediately in trouble. Whereas if you've got a big safety margin and something goes wrong, you've got a bit of resilience. Mm. So that brings us back to Challenger, where, by the way, I once went to a lecture, a corporate lecture, where we had a head of the health and safety executive who said, "For goodness sake," she said, "the root cause of the Challenger crash was a Fortney O-ring. For God's sake, it's not rocket science," which actually sadly it is rocket science as it happens, which was for my mind, with apologies to the tragedy itself, it was an extraordinary misuse of a common phrase, "It's not rocket science." Well, I'm afraid it is, actually.
Yes, yeah, but they wish that said that. Can I just say something on electric vehicles? Because we started the conversation around sort of electric vehicles. I live in an apartment block where there is a car park, and underneath there are some charging points. And we're having to decide the vexed question of, do we allow electric vehicles in there to be charged in there?
Do I live in an apartment block? and have an underground car park, and we have electric charging points all over the place, and indeed one of them is mine. So I understand your conundrum entirely.
It is difficult, and lithium batteries are a particular problem. And we had a client, a really lovely compliant client, very large company, and one of their vehicles, which was carrying lithium batteries, burst into flames on the motorway.
However, most electric vehicle fires, the root cause is in the low voltage system, not in the high voltage system. Now, of course, you get a problem on the low voltage system and a fire starts. Eventually, when the fire is consuming everything, it'll start to consume the batteries, and now you've got a big problem. Right. But modern lithium ion batteries, I've seen a thing called a nail test, where broadly they with great force ram a nail straight into the battery, and the old ones, that would cause big sparks and potentially a fire. Now it doesn't at all. So now, the crash worthiness and the safety of modern lithium-ion batteries is much better. However, if there is a fire caused by something else, then in due course they will get consumed, and there is a consequence. Yes.
And that's a good example of where technology is changing really quickly, and the British public's trying to do its best to adapt to it, but potentially not understanding or dealing with the risks. It's been a delight talking to you. I'm sorry I've rambled on a bit.
It's been fantastic. Thank you. Look, everybody who listens to this show will love the fact that the former senior traffic commissioner and now transport law practitioner and advisor to the world has spared half an hour to come on to this show. It'll be absolutely great. Thank you. So I am going to say this has been Lunch with Leon. I've been talking to Beverly Bell, the former senior traffic commissioner and now global advisor to traffic operators around the world. Still very much connected into our bus and haulage freight industry. And it's been a great delight, Beverly, to have you on the show. Thank you very much indeed, and good luck for the future.
And equally, it's been a delight to take part. Thank you, Leon, for inviting me. It was an honour. Thank you.